I never told no one that. My whole life I've been holding back. Every time I load my gun up so I can shoot for the star, I hear a voice like...
All right, everybody, another day, another episode of my favorite podcast. Yes, it's my own podcast. I'm being biased, but I gotta say, I am completely honored to have a TEDx speaker. Not only a TEDx speaker, but there's not many speakers that actually move me, but I'd have to say this one definitely does. John Libsey, aka the Pitch Whisperer, an incredible keynote speaker, TEDx talk, be the lifeguard of your own life. Of everything you have to download on YouTube, do it now. Watch it. There's a reason why there's over 1 million views. He's been featured on Larry King. He has an innate ability to motivate companies, sales teams, to turn the mundane case studies into compelling case stories so they win more new business. From John's award-winning career at Condé Nast, which we'll discuss, he shares the lessons he learned, and he's also a best-selling author, Revenue Rockstar Mastery, host of his own podcast, The Successful Pitch. Man, you've got everything. And your new book, which is a business fable, The Sale Is in the Tale.
It is, isn't it?
Whatever happened to storytelling? To me, that's the way I've been in sales most of my life.
Right.
Isn't that the way to connect?
It really is, Omar. And the reason is people buy emotionally, and they also buy from people that they trust, like, and know. And so stories are what make us memorable and magnetic. Instead of pushing out facts and figures, stories pull us in, and we can remember those stories if they're done well, and then repeat them to other people. And a good story can create all kinds of brand ambassadors.
It's all about the storytelling. I remember being in college. I was a freshman in my dorm, and I watched Bill Clinton speak for the first time. And it was very engaging. And I've been a fan of the way he communicates, because it's all about storytelling. It's all about bringing in the audience, all about making you feel welcome, making you feel like, hey, I can have a beer with this guy. Mm-hmm. Hey, I can have a lunch. I can have coffee. And that's overall, I don't care what you're selling, but because we're all selling something, but if you can connect with the person on a level, but everybody wants to, well, here, let me throw up all the product knowledge I have. Right. It's like, okay, congratulations. You memorized your script. You memorized all 50 bullet points of what your product or what your service is selling. But overall, why can't we just have a simple conversation? Why can't you just find out what the person is all about?
Yes. Well, I say that soft skills make you strong. And a lot of people, their brain goes, wait, what? How can something soft make me strong? And so there's three key soft skills: listening, active listening, empathy, which is what I think Bill Clinton really exceeds at. And then the third is the storytelling. So if you combine those three soft skills with whatever your hard skill is, whether you're a lawyer, an accountant, an architect, a tech person, then you're going to stand out. So you don't give up your hard skills of what you went to school to learn how to do, but when you add the soft skills to them, then you really stand out and make people want to buy from you versus everybody else.
So I'm the world's biggest introvert. It took me forever to actually speak and actually communicate. Do you feel that with the power of storytelling and using empathy and using all three that you speak about, that we can all connect with other people, that we can all engage, we can all become sellers?
I start with, tell me your own story of origin. How did you become an entrepreneur, an accountant, an architect? Whatever that is way more interesting than talking about the weather or sports as a way to build rapport with people. And then once you have told your story of origin, ask them what theirs is. How'd you get into this? Did you always dream of being an accountant or an architect, or was your family in the business of real estate, whatever it is? And that is a huge new way to connect. And it also helps introverts not worry about small talk. Because if you've got your own story of origin, I worked with an architecture firm when they were getting ready to pitch to win a new business. And they have a team slide like everybody does. And instead of the usual, I've been here 10 years, I do this and this, I got these wonderful little stories of origin out of them. Like, I was 11 years old playing with Legos. And now I have a son that's 11. I still play with Legos with him. That's what inspired me to become an architect. Or one woman said, when I was a little girl, instead of saying, take me to Disneyland, I'd beg my parents to drive me downtown to see skyscrapers. Didn't even know what an architect was, but I knew I loved skyscrapers. So those little stories give us a sense of the person and their history. And it's a great way to start a conversation.
On a basic level, though, we all love origin stories. That's why we're all rushing down to see all these Marvel movies and all these DC movies, because at the end of the day, we know it. But let's hear the origin. Let's hear everybody's origin, because everybody has a story to tell.
Well, if you're anything like me, I was always asking my parents to tell me the story of the day I was born. Where was dad? What time was I born? Was I early? Was I late? And then, of course, the story of origin. How did my parents meet? You know, what was their wedding day like? It's just, it goes on and on and on. There's so many stories of origin. And so if you have your own about your career, it's automatically in a whole different mindset when people are having a conversation with you.
Well, you know, speaking of origin stories, you do it so well when you talk about your being a lifeguard and how many years later it actually served its purpose through your TEDx talk, The Lifeguard of Your Own Life.
Yes. Well, I had majored in advertising in college, and through a series of different steps, found myself selling advertising for a company called Condé Nast, which is GQ and Wired and Vanity Fair and ArcDigest, several great brands that people know. And then I'd been there 15 years, and then the mortgage crisis hit in 2008. And luxury advertising plummeted, and I got the call from my boss in New York when I was in LA saying, you know, we've laid off 30% of the staff in New York and everyone in the outside offices. You got to be out by the end of the day. I said, end of the day? But I had been a lifeguard in my youth in the suburbs of Chicago. And one of the lessons I learned when I saved a little girl was when something stressful happens, you don't panic. Your training kicks in and you stay calm, in this case, to save the little girl. And then this same thing, it felt like a kick to the gut to get that call. But instead of panicking or getting angry, or as they say, getting your frontal cortex hijacked by your fight or flight response, my lifeguard training kicked in and I said, well, don't you need a status report of where the ad should be appearing? And she said, well, that would be amazing, but everyone else is so angry, they're just storming off. And I said, while this doesn't feel good, I still care about the people that I've had as clients for 15 years. I've watched them get married and have kids. I'm not going to do that to them just because I am not here anymore. Little did I know that that one decision would affect me 2 years later when I got the call to see if I wanted to come back to the job I was being laid off from at the time, because I'd left on such a good note. And so I really learned that, unlike in a hurricane, for the people who don't evacuate, and so they send a helicopter to come get you, you have to be your own lifeguard. You know, you got to throw yourself a buoy, a life preserver. And we all experienced that in the pandemic with a disruption. You know, people are having to homeschool their kids for the first time and figure out how to have a home office and 101 other issues and fears and challenges. And, you know, no one was saying, let me come over and set up your home office, Omar, right? No, you got to figure that out on your own. And, oh, there's a shortage. There's a backlog of microphones and cameras. Figure it out. So we're our own. We've all been through in some way or shape or form. I don't know how to homeschool my kid. We're going to have to figure it out. We've all been our lifeguard of our own life. And it's just going to continue. We're never going to say, well, that was over. Now nothing's ever going to disrupt me again. I'm never going to be laid off. I'm never going to have a global pandemic. There's always something, a plane that gets canceled, somebody that treats you poorly, you know, you are the lifeguard of your own life. You decide how you're going to respond.
The thing, though, is so many people just lead off with their emotions.
Yeah.
Why is that? I mean, you would exactly. You would think with all, everything that's happened to us, the mortgage crisis, you said it best. We've been through crisis after crisis, but yet a lot of times it's still that knee-jerk reaction of,
yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Part of what's happening is alluded to it is the fight or flight response kicks in when you feel like you're in any kind of danger or, you know, you're losing your job, your revenue, whatever. And you just go right to fear and you start fighting or you just run away and hide. Emotional intelligence is when you can acknowledge this is painful, but zoom out a little bit. I've actually created something I call the 5-5-5 method. So let's say somebody cuts you off in traffic. Well, some people lose their mind over that and other people just let it go. So if you're the movie director of your own life, you decide, will this matter in 5 minutes, 5 hours, or 5 days from now? If you're still obsessing 5 days from now about somebody who cut you off in traffic, there's a problem, right? And so when something big happens, and now I teach this in companies, you know, because in sales, there's a lot of rejection, a lot of no's, a lot of hard work that doesn't pan out into anything. Sometimes people hurt you, betray you, whatever. You just say to yourself, I got to 5-5-5 this. And let it go. I'm not going to let, you know, I had a horrible morning. Am I going to let ruin my rest of my day, my week? No. And so if, you know, the team is so frustrated over a big loss, you're like, all right, we can all complain about this for 5 hours and then we're never going to talk about it. So get it all out, let it go because we need to be resilient. And so having something that easy to remember, 5-5-5 it and start having a group of friends that support you in that. You're like, ooh, Omar, sounds like you might want to 5-5-5 that, you know, how long are you going to obsess about this or worry about this. Now, you can also use it in personal stuff. Like when my dad died 10 years ago, I wish I had this. You know, I could go back to my younger self and say, yeah, 5 days from now, you're going to still be devastated, but let's do it again. 5 weeks, 5 months, 5 years from now. So 5 years from now, you'll still miss him, but I promise you, you won't be this sad. So I love this tool to help all of us override the fight or flight response.
When it comes to both personal and financial and business, it really does because, I mean, I've been in sales and on so many levels. And yeah, sometimes, you know, people, sometimes a prospect leads you on. Sometimes even your client leads you on, right? And you're doing all this work and you're like, I'm getting there. This is my third, my fourth, my fifth. Seventh follow-up. And you know, the statistics are like, oh, well, this is it. We're getting close to that finish line.
Yeah.
And there was never a finish line.
There was never a finish line. Well, you know, I have created this ladder of how to go from invisible to irresistible with your clients. And it makes you put your empathy hat on for where do people see you? Because in sales, we were taught to do projections, right? I got this many people at 20%, this many at 50%, this many at 90%. And then you crunch the numbers and you go, this is my projection for the week, the month, the year. Well, nobody ever thinks of the, you know, has anyone ever come up to you, Omar, and said, hey, Omar, put me down for 50% on your projections? No, right? Nobody thinks of themselves as a percentage. So we have to put our empathy hat and go, where do they see us? Are we invisible? They never heard of us. They don't, or maybe we're at what I call interesting rung of the ladder. They're like, Omar, send me some stuff. I'm interested. You put it down on your projections, blah, blah, blah. I call this being stuck at the friend zone at work. You know, we've all been stuck. Maybe not you. You're handsome and charming. I'm sure you never had anybody put you in the friend zone in your dating life. But us mortals here, we've all been in the friend zone at dating. And so being stuck at the friend zone at work is when they say they're interested and then you get ghosted. You get crickets. And so how do we get out of that friend zone at work? My solution is storytelling. You tell a story that intrigues them enough to want to have another conversation. Imagine another outcome besides just never pulling the trigger or going with your competitor.
That's mind blowing right there. And you can use it on your, you can use it personal.
Yes.
John, I wish I've never been friend zoned. I've been friend zoned so many times that it's like maybe I need to get rid of the John Cusack persona and just go with the mean guy.
Yeah,
but either way, but
standing outside with the boombox didn't work.
No. You know, it did in 1988, but you know, everybody wants that, both in sales and, you know, the glory, the, you know, you hit the sales, you projections, because everybody stats, they always say stats don't lie. You know, you have four meetings, you're going to close one.
Right.
But it's funny because then you're like, okay, but I've done eight and I've only closed one. What happened to the other one? And it's the same thing because stats are just stats. Because yes, you can have, you know, as many follow-ups, and it's some people are just so nice and they just can't say, yeah, I'm not interested, because right. That's just them. And we, you know, we always project ourselves, well, this is the way it should be, but really that's only our own, that's a reflection of us. And it's no different than in the friend zone, because, you know, you're like, well, I have all these qualities. I'm a rock star. I'm amazing. John says I'm good looking. I'm the cat's meow. but yet, you know, she doesn't think that. But right. it's still sales. Whether it's, hey, I'm selling life insurance, I'm selling finances, I'm selling is no different than, hey, I'm selling you an amazing night tonight. I'm selling you, let's go steady. I'm selling you, let's create a partnership. I'm selling you, let's spend the rest of our lives together. It's always, you have to give them the either on a personal level, mm-hmm. the other person, or your client, or your prospect. You have to sell them a reason to continue, or a reason to seal the deal, to, you know, sign, seal, delivered, all the above.
It's true, because if I tell people one of the best ways to increase your closing ratios, you're like, why am I talking to eight people and I'm supposed to close one out of every five or whatever it is? My gut, 9 times out of 10, what's going on there is you're not telling stories that tug at heartstrings to create an emotion. You're pushing out facts and figures. And so that's a very difficult way to, you know, get closing. But if you tell a story that, and here's the secret, that somebody sees themselves in that story, then they want to go on the journey with you and you no longer have to push.
But also, though, sometimes don't you feel we just go into that robotic because you've heard no. You have that 1 mile stare, the 50 yard stare or whatever, because, you know, that caller reluctance, or you've had so many doors slammed in your face that instead of just being John, just being Omar, you go back to the script. Right. Here, I'd like to introduce myself, you know, the personality goes out the window because you go back into your limiting beliefs. You go back into fear instead of confidence.
Yes. It takes work to be prepared and be fresh and in the moment. It takes energy. It takes, you know, I think of it like an athlete on the Super Bowl or Broadway actor. Those people don't phone it in. We have to bring our A game every time, just like the athletes and performers do at a concert. You know, Michael Bublé, I saw him recently. I mean, he knocks out of the park. There's, I mean, hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of people at a sports arena. You know, he doesn't go, oh, I'm just going to go through, you know, where's the monitor? I'm going to, you know, I don't even have to memorize the lyrics. No, he's got he's emoting feeling with the lyrics. He's not still memorizing the lyrics. And if it could be the 100th time he sang a song, but to him, it feels fresh. And that's our job as salespeople, storytellers, to bring it every time. And I tell people to think of your brain like a jukebox or a playlist, depending on how old you are. Some people don't know what a jukebox is. But instead of a song coming out, your story comes out. So let's say you have three kinds of avatars. Let's say you're selling real estate. You've got, you know, the young married couple, it's their first house, or you've got seniors who are downsizing and selling. There's different reasons why people would buy or sell a house. You don't tell the same story to the same people. You need a custom story so that they, again, see themselves in that story. So you've got your story for the first home buyers. You've got the story for people who are selling a house they've been in for many decades and the emotion that goes with that and how you helped all of those people along the way. Now, you're not the hero of the story, by the way. Your client is. You're like Yoda in Star Wars or a Sherpa helping someone climb Mount Everest. And that really makes a difference. And that's where people go, oh, gosh, you are telling the story you're telling me sounds just like me. And you help that person who was just like me with these pain points and struggles and challenges. That sure sounds like something I'd like to have or go on that journey with you. So I can give you an example if you'd like.
Are you giving us an example?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm all ears.
So I was working with a medical tech company and they said, oh, we have this piece of equipment that makes surgeries go 30% faster. It's so logical. Why aren't doctors just buying this instantly? I said, well, because even this is an emotional buy first and then backed up with logic. So we did some analysis of what 30% faster means. And I crafted this story for them. Imagine how happy Dr. Higgins was 6 months ago using this equipment down at Long Beach Memorial when he could go out to the patient's family in the waiting room an hour earlier than expected. And if you've ever waited for someone you love to come out of surgery, you know every minute feels like an hour. The doctor comes out of the surgery, goes, good news, the scope shows they're going to be fine. And then the doctor turns to the rep and says, you know, this is why I became a doctor, for moments like this. Now that rep tells that story to another doctor at another hospital who sees himself in it and says, you know what? That's why I became a doctor. I want your equipment too. Now the client said, oh gosh, it gives us chills. Not only are we not telling a story, it never occurred to us to make a patient's family a character in the story. So that's an example of a case story as opposed to just 30% faster.
I was horrible in science. So I could never be a doctor, but even I felt like, wow, I can be the hero.
Yes.
I can be the Doogie Howser MD. I am the hero in this story because what seems like an eternity,
yeah,
while my patient is waiting on pins and needles, okay. I come out way earlier than expected,
yeah,
and say, exactly, it is done.
Yeah. Well, let's break it down for everybody what the four parts of a good story are, because unlike being a gifted athlete or a singer, you don't have it. Anyone can learn to be a good storyteller. The first part is the exposition. You think of yourself like a journalist, who, what, where, when. And so you saw, I gave you the doctor's name, how long ago it was, what hospital it was. You got to paint the picture for us to get in the story. The second part is the problem. And here's the secret where empathy really comes in. The better you describe the problem, the better your clients think you have their solution. The more you can show the pain of what it's like. And you see, I use the technique there where I said, if you've ever had to wait for someone, and even if you haven't, you can imagine what it would feel like, or you know someone who did go through that. And then you have the solution. In this case, the story is the doctor comes out and says, good news. But if the story just ended there, it wouldn't really be a great story. It would just be an okay story. The secret and final fourth part is the resolution. What is life like after the person has used your product, your service, or hired you? And in this case, it's the dialogue that the doctor says to the rep about, that's why I became a doctor. Without that, it wouldn't be as nearly, and think of the Wizard of Oz. If it ended with Dorothy getting in the balloon to go back to Kansas, the end, it wouldn't be a classic story. But instead, there's that resolution scene where she's in bed going, oh my God, there's no place like home. And you were there. And I appreciate everybody so much now. That's why. So if you're going to learn to become a good storyteller, and I encourage everyone to do it, make sure your stories have all four parts and don't end just on the solution.
The thing is, so many people end on the solution. The secret sauce is always have the resolution.
Exactly. You got it.
Sort of like Casablanca.
Right.
This is the start of a, you know.
Right. Yeah. Beautiful friendship.
Beautiful friendship.
Mm-hmm. Those lines make us, right? Stories are memorable and repeatable. And why do we want our stories to be repeatable? For the meeting after the meeting. So let's say a client says, I'm going to look at three different vendors, whatever, insurance, architect, lawyers, software, you name it. Everybody comes in, they talk about numbers. And then the client has a meeting after the meeting. Well, we heard three pitches. What do you think? God, they all sound the same. Guess we should go with the cheapest. But Omar told this amazing story that really sounds like us. I think we should go with Omar. And let me tell you the story that Omar told us, because some of the people in the decision aren't hearing all the pitches. You need that brand ambassador to remember your story. So the story should be clear, concise, and compelling, the three C's. If it's not clear and you confuse them with a bunch of acronyms, they always say no, but they're not going to tell you they're confused. If it's not concise, they can't remember it. And if it's not compelling, if they don't feel anything, they're not going to remember it or repeat it. You got to tug at those heartstrings.
All about the emotions, but it always is.
Yes, no matter what you're selling.
No, and the best business books, the best personal development books, is when you can have the journey.
Yes,
the parable, the alchemist. Everybody loves the alchemist.
Yep,
because of the storytelling.
And that's what inspired me to write my business fable, The Sale is in the Tale. It's a story about storytelling. And I have people reading it going, oh my goodness, I thought this character and that character were going to do this instead of that. And I'm like, great. I'm glad you were so invested in the story. So it's
that's what people, those are the stories like the Ken Blanchard. I love the parable.
Yes.
And people, all that's, it's fiction, it's nonfiction. No, there's a story behind the story.
Yes, exactly.
And people always remember that. People, and it makes it an easier sell because, okay, I read it. I love it. Yeah. I digest it. And it's always like, bam. These are because you become a brand ambassador.
Exactly.
People want the edutainment too.
Yes,
right. Especially these days, right?
Well, when I work with a lot of healthcare sales reps, they tell me, you know, the doctor only has 10 minutes these days, and you know, and when I've interviewed doctors, they go, the last thing I want to have is somebody spewing off a bunch of data that I could look up myself about the product. But if they come and say, listen, I got a great story about another doctor whose practice I helped make more profitable, they'll have time for that story.
I learned that like 20 years ago with my ex-wife before we became entrepreneurs. She was a pharmaceutical sales rep. And she would always say they would always have that stare because it didn't matter what product or whatnot. The doctors heard so many pitches.
Right.
On what this drug can do, you know, the levels. Yada, yada, yada. And it's like, okay, well, you know, congratulations. You sound like an infomercial, or you sound like a commercial for Pfizer.
Yeah.
And instead of being like, you know, give that compelling story. Give a reason. Hey, it got this guy's, you know, whatever problem, whatever issue.
Yes.
You know, that you just said it best right there. It's all about keeping it simple, keeping it memorable.
Yep.
Because selling, yeah, we all have competitors. We all have somebody selling something similar, mm-hmm. but stand out. Stand out with being clear, concise,
yeah,
compelling. That's what stands out. I mean, that's when, believe it or not, reading your one sheet, reading everything, what I loved, two things. One, your TEDx talk, which I was like, I was blown away because I was expecting something. I've heard so many per se, because I've always wanted to do one, but yours stood out because of that story. And because, you know, it led a different path. So many people, when they're thrown into chaos, because you weren't expecting, hey, guess what? Good morning. By the way, by 4 p.m., can you get the F out of here?
Right. And even if you see things about, you know, we knew that sales were down and print was going away and it was becoming digital. It's like watching the Titanic in slow motion, mm-hmm. you know, where you go, oh, we can't turn this around in time. So.
And it threw me in there because I lived 2008. We all lived 2008. I was selling smoothies with my ex-wife with a luxury item. And at the beginning, you know, oh, we don't have anything to worry about. Right. Just like everybody else. Just like I'm sure GQ is like, well, you know what? Everybody's going to want to dress nice. Everybody's going to want a $5,000 suit. Because, you know, I would always read the stuff and I would always, oh, that this is awesome. Oh, yeah. You know, this Oxford only costs $600. Mm-hmm. since you know, yeah, when people have disposable income left and right, yeah, congratulations, you can do that. Right. But you know, when it comes to, we all have to pivot. And you're right, nobody was ever expecting the housing crisis, the mortgage meltdown. Nobody ever expected that because, quite frankly, you know, real estate would never end. Mm-hmm. It's also, you know, Corona, the pandemic, COVID, whatever you want to call it, it affected everybody. In fact, I thought it was, being a small business owner, it was my tail end, but I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I had the, is this going to be soup kitchen lines? Are we going to be, it was both economic, but also the uncertainty that, is this our Black Death? Is this the play?
Yeah.
And I was one of the first people to get Corona. And, you know, it was with the numbers. I'm like, oh, my gosh, am I going to have to write my own obituary? And that first day, the second day, the third day. And, yes, I was, when it all said and done, you know, living becomes the most important thing. And that's what, in general, you know, once that's satisfied, mm-hmm. yeah, everything else falls into place. But
well, as a sales keynote speaker, I see people so grateful to get back into live events again and be all together with people versus just a bunch of Zoom calls. And yet there's a lot of people that are really socially awkward because it's been 2 years or more since they've been in a big room and they have anxiety around that. And if you're an introvert to begin with, you didn't kind of mind being isolated, you know? So, and my friends with children say, oh my God, the kids are having such a hard time sitting through school. So it doesn't, like, you don't turn a switch on and off like that. There's an adjustment period.
Well, there's an adjustment period just now in general with our economy, with the world economy. Everybody's like, well, I don't understand why everything's just not back to normal. Right. It's like, well, we were shut down. We shut down the world for 2 years, and we were printing money. Like, if we had the Xerox, you see, we're both old.
Xerox, I know Xerox. Yeah.
So we had the Xerox machine going, printing up money left and right. Of course, things are going to take time. We're still at that level of just, you know, finally. We're not even a year with everything just being open and, you know, no mask, what mask. But at the end of the day, when it comes to selling too, and when it comes to success, just like your story, it's all about pivoting. Because, yeah, some people stayed locked up and said, you know, one day somebody will save me, while other people were like, at the end of the day, I have to save myself. I have to save my family. And that's what I love about your speech, because it had nothing to do with it, but it hits home now because we've all had to pivot. We've all had the, hey, by the way, you're laid off. We don't need you anymore. And you can even use that on a personal level. Hey, by the way, we've been married 15, 20 years, but guess what? I'm going in a different direction.
Yeah. And, you know, the need to 5-5-5 it and realize that it's painful now, but it won't be painful 5 weeks or 5 months or 5 years from now, because you'll figure it out.
Well, the 5-5-5 too, think about, I know so many people that, like what you said, when you get cut, somebody cuts you off and it's not even just 5 minutes. They'll ruin days. People ruin weeks and months based on an argument or something inconsequential that it bleeds off. And that's why it does. Everything has to be in balance, because if things aren't gelling at home, it's going to start bleeding into your sales presentations. It's going to start bleeding into your numbers. It's going to just affect everything.
I think the days are pretty much gone now where you're one person at the office and another person at work. Mm-hmm. It's much more seamless now, and people are much more authentic, much more vulnerable. And it's just changed the way people think about work, think about how they present themselves. You know, if you're trying to be a perfectionist during a pandemic, forget about it, right? You're not going to look, you know, your best 24/7 on a Zoom call. Maybe you can pull it together at the office, right? Or there's just so many things going on that your kids are going to come in when you're on a call and they don't understand what's going on. And so everybody had to really give people a lot of grace, I guess I would say.
But it also shows how resilient we are. Because I mean, would you have ever thought that going through all that, we had the grit in general to do that?
Well, as a speaker, I had to reinvent myself when all the live events got canceled. And they were like, okay, we're going to have 200 and some people on a Zoom call. Can you keep that many people entertained and not make it another boring Zoom call? And I, you know, said, yes, I've just found out about this software called Ecamm, where I can get a Stream Deck and have special effects happening. I can talk about butterflies in your stomach, getting them to fly in formation, and I can get butterflies to fly across my screen. I can tell my lifeguard story and make it seem like I'm underwater telling you that story. So there's all kinds of ways that you just, or can you teach our team how to look and sound good on camera? They're really nervous. They've never had to be on camera to make a sales pitch. So it created new opportunities, but it required reinventing myself one more time.
John, though, you never had, to me, you're an amazing speaker.
Thank you.
You can connect with me. It's like if we've known each other for years.
Yeah.
So to me, a lot of that's just that inner, you can make anything entertaining. I've seen your presentations. Okay. Trust me, I know some people that can bore a studio, a live 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 person crowd compared to Zoom. You just captivate, because once again, especially with our attention span now, with the social media attention span, the TikTok, the give it to me in a minute, the way you connect with people, the way you do know how to give compelling stories, because once again, like what you said, it's all about how you storytelling.
Thanks. Well, you know, and it requires some work. A lot of people go, oh, you're a natural. And they don't realize the amount of work, the amount of coaching, the amount of training, the amount of practice, watching my videos back to continue to refine it so that I can be entertaining. I remember the first time I gave a virtual talk during the pandemic, and I thought, that's weird. I usually get a laugh here. And then I realized everyone was on mute. I'm like, I wonder if this is going to work. And then when they took themselves off mute after the talk, oh, that was amazing. I sure needed to hear that more than ever, because I am having trouble being resilient, or whatever the topic was. And so people were like a plant needing water. But, you know, the first time you try something in a new format, you're like, I don't know if this is going to land. Like, you know, I don't feel the audience, or I don't see the smiles like I do in person. So eventually, you know, got better and better.
Yeah, but we're both in sales, and you have to, it's all about repetition. And you said it best, Michael Buglia, he practices the sound check.
Oh,
people think a rock band just shows up.
Yeah, no.
They literally practice and practice literally right before the show. Okay. And when you spoke about Michael Bublé, he has to do that going through some personal matters. I know
his son sick and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you perform in sales, when you perform as a performer, when you have to bring it,
yeah,
people aren't going to be understanding. Go, well, you know, John probably had, if you did bomb, John probably had a bad night last night, yeah, or he has things going on. No, people aren't that understanding. Yeah. People come to watch you, and that's why you have to always have to turn it on, and you have to be laser focused, and you have to be, this is it. These people, a lot of these people, this is the first time hearing me speak, mm-hmm, hearing me talk. It's not like you can walk around and go, hey, have you seen my TED? it's 1.2 million downloads, right? You just have to be like, hey, I'm here. This might be your first time. I'm here to captivate you. I'm here to show you, right, why I am the keynote speaker, not keynote speaker. You have to have that confidence and the awareness, and you have to bring it up.
We go see Top Gun again. We're not going, gee, you know, I've seen the original. I don't really need this one to be any good. No, we expect it to be as good, if not better. And, you know, we know Tom Cruise is older, but we don't care. We want him to still deliver and entertain us and wow us with all the special effects and tricks and loop-de-loops and whatever else is going on. And, you know, he proved he could still do it in his 60s. So I'm very admire that.
Well, it gives me hope that when I do hit 60, that I can still bring it like Tom Cruise.
Harrison Ford is 80.
Harrison Ford's 80, and we have a new Indiana Jones movie coming out.
That's people who love what they do and keep it going.
So overall, it's going to take forever just to say how we find, because you're a master of everything. You're a master podcaster. You're a master author. You're a TEDx speaker. How do we get the book? Sale is in the tail.
It's on Amazon or anywhere else you can buy books. If you buy it on Audible, I narrated it. But if you want the first chapter for free, I have a gift. You can just take out your phone and text the word pitch with a P, P-I-T-C-H, to 66866, and you get the first chapter for free. And hopefully that will intrigue you enough to want to know what happens next.
And your website, which is pretty amazing. It takes you to your TEDx talk. Mm-hmm. It also, I can be your pitch man.
Yes.
If you go on it, you can get the first chapter of the book too.
Yes, it's true. And there's an online course, as you mentioned, Revenue Rockstar Mastery, for people who might want to work with me in a group coaching situation on crafting their stories. But the main thing that I really love most is getting in front of groups of salespeople at their kickoff meeting and getting them to start telling stories so they don't keep burning out or coming in second place when they pitch against competitors, and watching them all become revenue rock stars.
The Revenue Rockstar Mastery. It's an online course. Mm-hmm. Now, group coaching, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's where people go through the course and then they go, oh my God, now I have a good structure. I just need some fine tuning. And then they hear me work with other people as well. And everyone learns together. It's a lot of fun.
And what I love about it too is you can be selling finances, you can be selling insurance, pharmaceutical sales rep.
Right.
It's great for whatever it is that you're selling.
Exactly.
And your podcast, The Successful Pitch, over 60 countries. Congratulations, man.
Thanks. Well, I've been doing it for 6 years now, so... and I've had guests from different parts of the world, and then they share it with their network. And that's how it grew to be heard in that many countries.
And once again, I'd have to say my favorite, you have to watch it. TEDx Talk, The Lifeguard of Your Own Life.
Thanks, Omar.
It's about innovation, disruptive stuff. And it also talks about, hey, man, you know, no one is going to save you.
Right.
It's all about saving yourself, right?
Yeah, and that's okay.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So, John, is there any final words that you want to motivate, inspire, tell that person that's in the red when it comes to pitching, when it comes to selling?
I love the quote from Arthur Ashe, the famous tennis pro, who said, "The key to success is confidence, and the key to confidence is preparation." So again, think of yourself like an athlete or Broadway performer. The more prepared you are, the more confident you are, and that is ultimately what drives your success. So don't wing it.
All righty, everybody. Book now. Join the group coaching. We can all be better sales. We can all learn how to pitch by giving compelling stories, giving compelling reasons, being a better storyteller. Buy the book. Hey, it's a parable. It's about a guy that, an old sales guy using old techniques. Look at that. I can be your pitch man.
You got it down. Yeah.
All righty, John. Hey, thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for this opportunity. I've learned a lot, and I will be purchasing the book because I love a good story. All right. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Omar.
What if it didn't work? What if you took action and made it happen and started living inside of your purpose? What if it didn't work? Right now you can make the choice to never listen to that negative voice no more. The hardest prison to escape is our own mind. I was trapped inside that prison for a long time. To make it happen, you gotta take action. Just imagine. What if it did work?